The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. Tonight we have a very special guest on, David Burnell, who is a former Pirate, someone who I had the honor and privilege of coaching during his career at East Carolina University. And we're going to talk about his life tonight and some of the things that he is experiencing currently, which are nothing less than amazing. My man, the Flea, has become famous.
No, but not yet.
David, great to have you on the show. And man, we go back a long way, brother.
1995, 99.
Yeah. So you've had quite the experience since graduating from ECU. But what I want to do first is talk a little bit about your time at ECU. And, you know, talk a little bit about your time at ECU, what you experienced there, being a member of the football team, being a student athlete, and maybe some of your most, some of your fondest memories there.
Okay. My time at ECU involved 300s and 110s. That's all I remember. That's it. I tell everybody, and I know we're joking, but on a serious note, my time at ECU was valuable because of your training, because of the strength and conditioning. I took that with me everywhere.
Well, I appreciate that more than you can imagine, but at the same time, I have some comical memories a little bit of how when the guys pushed the number 300s, we did to 8, I think it was.
10.
Well, no, not yet. We had 8, and you always made 7 until we got those guys out there with you that last week. It helps you around and made sure you made number 8. Then, when we pushed it to 10, and I didn't push it to 10, they did. You kept making 9.
Could not make that last one, man.
But that last week, you got through that 10th one, isn't that right?
Yeah, man. I don't know how we did that, but whew, those legs become jelly. But that's not even the funny part. The funny part is when Norris stripped naked. And he ran the 300. Oh yeah. Man, those were some times. That was how bad it was.
I remember that also.
You remember that, right?
Oh yeah, that was tough to forget right there.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing about it was once you made those 300s, you became a coach. And then by the time we got to the end of the summer, we had about 75 coaches and maybe about 10 guys didn't make them yet.
Yeah.
So, man, that was some great camaraderie. It really was. You know, I'm never going to forget that. And, you know, the way you guys hung your hat on that and, you know, just how much that meant from a leadership standpoint within the team. And really, I think it really served to bond the team together. We just kind of fell into that, you know?
Man, and it did more than bond. It even mental toughness for me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at one point, it just becomes mental.
Right. No doubt about that.
And you just have you know, to, so,
Sometimes that fourth quarter becomes mental.
What's that?
I said sometimes that fourth quarter becomes mental also. So
yeah,
that's what it served to help us win some games, hopefully.
Yeah, sure did.
But you know, I remember back when you had a very good friend named Jerome Barnwell. And I just wonder if you talk to Rome any from time to time.
No. I mean, when you say time to time, man, maybe a year, once a year or something, I see something on Facebook or something. But yeah, that's the whirlwind of life. You get shot out after East Carolina, which I didn't think could get any faster. But once you leave East Carolina or the university, man, just a whirlwind of life just hits you.
Right.
And I think he had a baby and all that stuff. Yeah, I don't even know what he's doing. I couldn't even tell you what he's doing.
I can tell you what he's doing. He's up there at Vidant, and he trains people. You know, he's got a group that he trains, puts their picture on Facebook all the time. Up at Vidant, he also works for the hospital because I had to have a surgery one time, and he was actually in on my surgery. So he came to see me the next day.
He did surgery on you?
Yep. Oh, he didn't do the surgery. He was just there. Yeah, like, he didn't do the surgery.
My man became a surgeon. I was like, dang.
Well, he does something pretty significant with the hospital. I'm not sure what his title is, but he was definitely in a surgery doing something. So I think he's doing really well though. I see him from time to time. He's always has a lot of enthusiasm as usual.
So and, he wasn't operating on you, but you saw him in the surgical room?
Well, he came to see me after the surgery and told me he was in the surgery. Yeah. Hey, so
I call him up and see what he's doing.
Yeah, you need to figure out what his title is, because I really don't know what it is. I don't think he's an MD, but he does something. You know, they have surgical teams.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he's in on that. But anyway, you know, I remember that you and Jerome really were, I mean, you guys were like, you know, the prayer group for the team. I mean, everybody came to you guys when they had an issue and needed some prayer. And, you know, I know the coaches always relied on you guys for prayer, to do the team prayer. And, wow, you know, I remember that because you guys just did such a great job with that, lifting up the team and lifting up guys from time to time when they needed it. So I really remember that. I know a lot of people, I think, were appreciative of that. So are you still praying?
Yeah, I pray. I pray. I pray all the time, man. I mean, I think it's a different, but I do got to correct you. It was Damon Davis was the head. He was like the one that was really doing the prayer thing and bringing us in.
Okay.
Me well, and Jerome, I know Jerome, he would do it too. Flea was just really motivating. Like I would love to motivate people, whether it was God, whether it was, you know, whether it was 300s or whatever. I was just I was there, man. I was just happy to be there.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, you got the name Flea because, of course, you know, you're not a real big guy in stature, but at the same time, man, you just demonstrated to people. Yeah, I just think of this thing, man. It ain't the size of the dog in a fight, man. It's the size of the fight in the dog, and that's what Flea was all about. You know, because your energy, your enthusiasm, your work ethic, all those things were a great example for a lot of other guys that needed to have the intrinsic motivation that you had. You know, they might have had size, might have had some talent, but a lot of times they didn't have what was in their, what you had in your heart. And so for you to kind of spread that around, I think it really had a significant impact on the football team. So, I will always remember you that way. No question.
Good. Because so, I'm still that way.
I know you are.
I'm still that way.
And we're going to talk a lot about that, too, because, you know, the Pirate Nation needs to catch up on what you've been up to, man. And but the first thing I'd like to talk about is, you know, when you left ECU, how long was it before you joined the Marines?
Yeah, that was like, I think it was like 3-4 years after ECU. I was after ECU.
Yeah.
I became a shoe salesman.
Okay.
At a shoe place. I think it was Payless or something. And they kept dangling the carrot. Yeah, we're gonna make you corporate, you know, because you got a 4-year degree. But all I was doing was selling shoes at the end of the day. And then I saw the sun come up. I remember I saw the sun come up one day and the sun come down, and I was still in this shoe store. And I said, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And that's when this Marine dude walked in. He walked in at the same time the sun was coming down. He walked in. It was like a movie. He was like, man, he saw it on my face. He was like, man, you want to get out, don't you? And I said, yes. Gotcha.
Well,
so then, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I had to kind of quickly try to find a bio on you because I'm so far behind on what all you've been into. And I saw where your dad was a combat medic in Vietnam.
He was a combat medic, but he didn't go to Vietnam. He was during Vietnam.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So, but he was on standby, but he never went there. He ended up at 82nd Airborne in Fort Bragg later on and retired out there. So,
yeah.
Later on,
well,
but
you know, let's go back and tell me a little bit about your influences growing up. Tell me a little bit more about your dad and your family. And, yeah. You know, and then, of course, what brought you to ECU?
Yeah, military brat. I was a military brat all my life. So I grew up in several different places, one being born in Hawaii. Then I remember moving to Boston, Massachusetts. And then going back to California, South Carolina, then back to Hawaii. So it was all, that's a military brat's life. And right. You always have to fit in, quit. You have to, if you play sports, you gotta show them what you have quickly, you know, cause you just gonna get cut cause the coach don't know you. And so I got lucky and I made some football team and some of the high schools, and then I really liked it. So then I was like, man, I'm gonna play college once I get out. And I didn't get any scholarships. So I had to walk on to EC. And I walked on to EC and then met Coach C. That was it. I didn't even play. I wasn't even trying to play football anymore after I met you. I was just trying to lift weights and be a super elite pirate. That's what most people don't think. Like, people think, oh, you know, yeah, I was trying to work on receiving, but I mean, I was honest with myself. I mean, these guys, DeLeo Dodd, all these huge dudes, and I was like 7th string. I said, you know what, while I'm here, you know, the stuff that you taught me with strength and conditioning and how big I got and fast and the mental toughness, that was the thing I fell in love with. I was like, man, I'll work out all day because I know at the end of the day, I'm taking this with me, you know?
Yeah.
So Yeah.
Well, you certainly took it with you. Playing high school football, were you in Fayetteville?
Yeah, 71st. Okay. Falcons. Okay.
So you came to ECU from there?
Yeah. I was pretty good until I messed up my, left leg in one of the last games. And so, yeah, scholarships, all that stuff went out of the window because that was my senior year. So then I had to walk on, and then I walked on at ECU.
So what's really your degree in?
Information processing.
Okay.
I don't even know what that is. I don't even know what we learned, man. Information processing.
Okay, so you go to Camp Lejeune, is that right?
Well, you gotta right when we got out of the when we
Paris
graduated from East Carolina, I was in working for the shoe store. And then from the shoe store, I was like, man, I gotta get out of here. So that's when I just enlisted. He said, you travel. And I was like, all right, I'm in. Gotcha. I said, hey, I got a 4-year degree. Can I be an officer? He said, yeah, you gotta take another test. I said, go ahead and enlist me, man. I ain't taking no more tests. I didn't want to take no more tests, man. These ass vests. And so I enlisted. Went to Paris Island. Whew, that was crazy, boy.
So let me ask you this. What was harder, the 300s or the Crucible?
300s, hands down. That, well, let me finish. Paris Island was a cakewalk. It was a mental thing for me because every time I stepped on the deck, I was stronger than these Marines that were trying to instruct us. I was 20. I just came from college. You know what I'm saying? With 300, I was still huge. Man, they were trying to break me down. They seek out the strongest guy and they try to break him down. So they try to mess me up mentally, physically. Man, it was a cakewalk. They hated me. I was running circles around them.
Yeah, I love to hear that, man. I love to hear it.
Yeah. So it was actually mental. They really wanted to break me down and say, hey man, you know, you're a private. You're E2. You enlisted. You below, yeah. You know. So I had to go through that a lot. That was the hardest part.
Now, do you remember something called JJ Did Ty Buckle?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Don't ask me to recite it, though. I know it says judgment, all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah, it's a leadership principle of the Marine Corps.
Yep.
And so I wrote a book called Collegiate Battlefield. It's on Amazon. But I've got them all in there. And basically what I wanted to do was I wanted to talk about the relationship between athletics and the military. And so those leadership concepts, of course, have a lot of application to athletics. And, you know, athletics and the military, to me, they kind of go together. So I did write a book about that.
I gotta read that book.
Yeah,
It's old, right? It's a while back, or is this a new one?
Yeah, it's a few years old. I wrote two books, but it's a few years old. I didn't really promote it much, but it's still on Amazon. But yeah, it's called Collegiate Battlefield. But that's exactly what it's about. And you know, when I retired, I basically went down and I worked with the 2nd and 3rd Battalion. I trained the 2nd and 3rd Battalion at Sneed's Ferry at Stone Bay.
Okay.
So I had to get secret clearance to go in there and train those guys. And none of them knew how to run. So I tried to teach them how to run, give them a little bit of speed development work.
Wow, that's crazy. You probably was killing them though, because.
Well, those special ops guys, man, there's a lot of those guys that really worked hard and were in great shape, you know.
Oh, they special ops. 2nd, 3rd
Battalion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and then, of course, you know, they moved 1st Battalion from California now to Stone Bay as well. So you got 1st, 2nd, and 3rd there. And, you know, I'd hear the gun range from somewhere, I guess some other place around Lejeune, wherever it was. I'd be hearing the gun range all day. But yeah, it was interesting as to how strength and conditioning has now become part of the military. And there's been many strength and conditioning coaches hired across the country to train the military. So and the facilities are very nice as well. But one thing about it was I didn't find many fast twitch people. I didn't find many people who could sprint very fast or knew how to run at all. And so I felt like I could help them in that way, as you know, with regard to that. And of course, I'm really big on kettlebells. So I really thought that fit in well with those guys as well, the kettlebell type training.
Oh, that's you probably started that.
You can take kettlebells everywhere, you know.
You probably started that craze, because I remember there was at one point in the military in our workouts that these kettlebells went crazy. Like everybody's like, yeah, you got to do these kettlebell workouts and stuff. You probably started that.
I'm not too sure.
All that stuff.
Yeah, we got in there fairly early. And actually, there's a colonel that wrote a preface in my book as well. So you might enjoy that also. His name is Colonel Bristol. Okay. And I actually brought him in to speak to ECU before the BYU game. And we ended up winning that game. But that was the best pregame talk I ever heard in my life. And his story was, incredible. I mean, really incredible. So I'll never forget that guy.
You know, the best pregame that we had when you were there, you brought these guys in. I don't know who it was, but the thing was called filling up your dash. You filling up that dash. You know, the dash on your epitaph from 1977, when you was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the day. Remember that one?
I vaguely remember it, but I do remember it.
That one stuck. Yeah. That one stuck. That one's on my album. That one, okay. That filling up your dash, that stuck with me. That stuck with me and a couple of other college people, and we still talk about that to this day. And that's kind of like what my life is when you say, man, you've been all over the place. Because I told mom, man, I'm filling up this dash. I'm doing everything I can under the sun while I'm here.
So I got you, man. Yeah, we did a lot of research every week on what we were going to talk about. Always had to come up with something. We usually had a weekly theme, and the theme would be related to what we needed to do that week based on how we performed in the past game. So, yeah, a lot of thought went into that stuff. And I really appreciated Steve giving me the, you know, freedom to be involved in that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was enjoyable. It really was. So tell me a little bit about your deployments.
Yeah. I mean, I think 2008. Yeah. 2008, I was in Karma, Iraq. So that was the first time I saw, like, that's when I was like, whoa, man, life is not that certain, you know, and there's other people that's just trying to get rid of you. It just kind of hits you, you know, when you come face to face with mortar rounds or whatever. And we had a pretty bad suicide bombing out there. And then that made me realize, man, this ain't no game. And I don't think I like this anymore. You know, I was like, yeah, I mean, this is cool. Oh, hoorah for the good cause of the country. But I mean, after we lost some of our guys in 2008, it was just like they just gone. They were just gone. And so, I had to reevaluate. But while I was reevaluating, I mean, the life is still going on in the military, and I ended up in Baghdad, Iraq, and then saw some more stuff, and then went into, I mean, that's when the green zone was closing when I was there. And then I went to Afghanistan. Then I was done. I was done. When you think back and you can't remember a Christmas or you try and think back, damn, what did I do that last Christmas or that Thanksgiving? And it's just deleted. It's like gone. You know, you just don't even know. And it's like, yeah, man, I had to get out. And mine was bittersweet. I mean, I know you guys love your military people, but I'm sitting here face to face and I'm like, man, I gave it, you know, and I'm kind of run down from it. And I'm just glad I got out, you know, with a sense of mind and still physically fit and everything. So.
Well, praise God for that, because, you're doing some great things now, and can you tell me a little bit about what your rank was and kind of what your job was in the Marines?
Yeah, I was an 0621 radio operator, and then when I got higher, I was a radio chief. But, I mean, of course, we have higher billets after that. We hold higher billets after that, but, I mean, basically a radio chief, 0629, staff sergeant is what I got out as an E6.
Okay.
So I made it all the way to E6. And then it's one point you look at your boss and you look at the people above you and you say, do I want to be like them? And then I say no.
So what was the total time you were in the Marines? It
was 11 years.
Wow.
That's just, so what, 2008, no, 2003, 2014, is that 11? Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty significant amount of time.
Yeah, and it goes fast. That's the thing. It goes fast.
Well, I know you saw a lot, and when I was working at Stone Bay, you know, they made me go through, I think, two or three full days of suicide prevention education. And then when I saw the number, which was like 20 some people a day that are veterans or current military who commit suicide, wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So, it's a tough deal out there.
Yeah, if you don't have, luckily for me, I had a strong family. I'm very family oriented. You know, I got strong family back at home. But a lot of these kids that come in there, that's all they have is the military, and they get back and get pushed out into the real world. They had no clue what to do.
Yeah.
Their life was in Iraq. They were at the highest point when they were in Iraq.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know if you remember my son, Bo, but he is a combat medic. You know, he went to combat medic training out in Texas after he got, went in the Air Force, and basically he's still he's a paramedic in the emergency room. And he's still a reservist and a tech sarge. And so up in Goldsboro, he kind of, I guess he runs the medical thing a little bit, you know, whatever he does with, I guess he's got some kind of position there, you know, that one weekend a month. But he just got promoted to tech sarge not too long ago. but he was also a fireman. So
he I don't know if you remember.
You remember that little guy running around, you know?
I don't remember Bo so much. I remember Coach Logan's son.
Yeah.
I don't remember your Bo. I can't remember. I know you had a
he was pretty small then. They used to put him in the plyometric boxes and lock him down in the plyo boxes.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Time flies.
Okay, so let's move on from the Marines. And, man, you have been doing so many things now that I kind of heard about from long distance, but I had no clue all the stuff that you've been into, I guess, from, what do you call it, like the entertainment industry?
Yeah, the entertainment industry. I would just say film.
So you get out of the Marines.
Well, you gotta, the transition goes like this. Exactly what you said about all these Marines getting out, committing suicide. We realized that too. And we wanted to build a community, some kind of brand that represented these young veterans getting out. And so we built this brand, and by building this brand, like, we made a t-shirt, made a little logo, and we built this brand to represent young military people doing creative things, like to kind of motivate them. Hey, man, get out of the military. It's not over, you know, keep creative, keep creating things. And so that transition, while I was in the military doing that, and I was encouraging people to create things, the finger pointed back at me and they were like, so what you doing? What you doing to create things? And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I'm telling everybody to create things, and what am I doing? So then I got into first modeling the brand, and then making small commercials for the brand, and then eventually getting on American Ninja Warrior. I started playing with Hollywood a lot. Like, I started, because I was living in California, so I started getting an agent, started booking commercials, and it just kept growing from there. Went from small to big. But I was doing it for a long time, and I'm still doing
it. So did you get into some acting classes at all?
I did some workshops with some prominent directors. Was really expensive, but it was only about 2-3 months. And then after that, just self-taught into the industry, and getting an agent and building a portfolio, and telling the agents, hey, I'd like to, this is what I can offer, or this is who I am. It just kept growing from there and there.
Yeah. Well, like, tell me a little bit about the first thing you started to do. Like, what did you start with?
Yeah, I mean, the very first thing was promoting my t-shirt, our brand, in the military. So you can see some old YouTube videos of me saying, yeah, this is VE. I was doing some rapping for it and stuff. VE is the cool brand and stuff. And then that went to modeling the clothes. And then from there, that's when I had to be a leader, right? And I said, okay, well, I'm telling people to be a creative. So let me try to get on American Ninja Warrior. Let me apply for American Ninja Warrior and see if I can get on. And then I got on and I was like, oh, okay. So now the co-founder of this brand, this creative brand, is on American Ninja Warrior. And then I said, what else can I do? And then I got an agent, and then I booked a USAA commercial. That was huge. That was like, all I had to do was like put a card in the ATM. And then I got all kinds of other commercials, and did small movies, what do you call it? Short films, to bigger films, then got small parts in the movies, and it's all on IMDb. And then it went, then when I got here, it got serious. I'm in Germany.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where you were.
Yeah, I know, because you said that, because you said 1930. I was like, man, it's 2 o'clock over here.
So what's going on in Germany in relationship to, I mean, you know, so you have some things you're filming there now or what?
I have two projects I'm working on right now. Hope that goes well.
Yeah.
But I filmed a couple of, I was on some small roles. I had some very small roles on Netflix in a couple of movies. And what's his name? Paul Giamatti?
That name sounds familiar.
Man, he's in all kinds of movies. But yeah, I got to meet Paul Giamatti. I got to meet Michael B. Jordan. That was crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know Michael B. Jordan, right?
Yeah, I think I know who that is.
Yeah, I mean, you know these actors, but
I don't know much about actors because, you know, I don't watch a whole lot of movies, I guess, but you know, I just want to become familiar with what you do now because I want to follow you and see what's going on, man.
Yeah, I mean, I could be doing more. It's just you gotta continue to apply, put yourself out there, and make sure you up. I have to update my portfolio all the time. And just get my name out there and hope a big one comes along like IBM.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I look at the ECU football program maybe a few years ago, and I see these people in there that made it big, and Sandra Bullock and whoever, and, you know, David Burnell needs to be up in there right now. I mean, I don't think a lot of people know what you've been doing, man, and how successful you've been with this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sandra Bullock, I'm not there yet. I mean, I got these little roles that I need a main role. I need something huge. And then and also, man, the film industry has changed. You know, Netflix, you know, you said Sandra Bullock, Netflix wasn't even, remember back in 90, 95, 99, Netflix wasn't even a thing.
Right.
It was Blockbuster. So, yeah, I just got to continue to be innovative and keep pushing and have that grit, that 300 fourth quarter grit to if I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to keep going, I got to keep pushing. I got to go all the way through, make albums.
Did you ever have any opportunities to get into any kind of military movies or
shows? Yeah, the last one was the last one. I was a Buffalo soldier. It was called Blood and Gold, and I actually had some talking lines in that one at the very end of the movie. And I'm hoping that the director wants to do part two of that movie.
Did you tell him you had been a dog soldier?
No, I mean, I have a couple of pictures where I just look military and people book me for that.
That's great stuff. Well, you know, every time that commercial comes on, of course, I didn't even know who it was for, IBM. Now you educated me.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of your teammates would be like, yo, man, that's our guy, man. That's our teammate.
Yeah, everybody hitting me up. I see you on the commercial, man. Is that you, man? It's every other day I got somebody hitting me up. But it's pretty cool because I get to see, you know, people that I went to college with because I'm all the way out here in Germany. Yeah. I'm just happy that you have this this is crazy that you have this podcast. This is awesome. And I saw your message. I was like, man, I didn't know I got an invite for this. Like a long time ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe a couple hundred people. I think Steve Logan, or I coached Chase Rice, a country singer at Carolina when I was there. I was there for 10 years, and he was there. So I've had him on. And I think Steve Logan had about 1,500, 1,600 hits on this deal. But usually it's just a few hundred people look at it, and it's kind of an ECU thing.
Yeah.
But I've really enjoyed it. Of course, I've made it a Christian podcast. So I talk about those. I talk about faith quite a bit as well. But so that's very important to me in my life right now. I'm trying to lose myself to gain the kingdom, brother. So
what does that mean?
Well, you know, there's so much ego and so much me in coaching, you know, and in athletics. You know, when I retired, I decided, man, I got to let that go. And I got to put God first. And I really enjoyed spending time with my wife and, you know, all those types of things. And I didn't have a whole lot of, I didn't have a chance to do. You know, strength coaches don't even get a vacation. So,
yeah. Yeah. You guys are working, man. What made you do this podcast?
What's that?
What made you do this podcast?
Well, the Sports Objective, they do several different podcasts for ECU. I guess, you know, they kind of talked to me a little bit about as far as, you know, what I'd be interested in, because I interviewed a couple times and I said, sure, you know, I'd be very interested because I love bringing former players on and people I've met in athletics over the years. I had Coach Pagano on, and I had the general manager of the Steelers on, a few other people that were pretty significant. And for me personally, I love reconnecting with the guys that I coached. And that was what it was always about for me. I kind of hung out with the players more than I hung out with the other coaches, except for my own staff, I guess. But that's what I really always enjoyed, is being with the players. You know, I wanted to kind of stay young, and that's why I kept playing all that rap music in the weight room. You know, I had to play all them Master P songs and learn all the words to them.
Wait, but how old are you?
67, brother.
Oh, that's 67?
Yeah.
And you still working out and still lifting weights and everything like that?
Oh, yeah. I got the gym in the garage, man. I go get it. Had a good workout this morning. So, I'm never going to stop working out, you know that. But, people coach now into their there's a lot of NFL coaches that are, I don't know how old some of those guys are, but they, you know, it seems like they never want to retire. But, if you're a strength coach, you're working 10, 12 hours a day. I mean, it wears on you after a certain number of years. You know, you feel it. So, you know, being on your feet all day. And, I always hated to lose. You know, anytime I lose anything, it takes something out of me. So, I mean, I had to, you know, I hate losing. So,
yeah,
I'm kind of glad I'm away from that a little bit. You know, of course, winning is great, and we did plenty of that. But, and I've had a few accolades in my profession and so forth. So it's been good. It's been really good.
What do you max out on?
Oh, I don't max out on anything now. All I do is reps. But I have a squat machine. You know, I can still throw 400 on the squat machine, do a set of things. Well, the squat machine's, that's more like, that's probably more like 300 than 400, you know.
Yeah, but still, are you still doing 300, 400? Oh, my God. I'm in pain right now. My knee, I think I messed my knee up, but yeah. I'm still trying to do flag football. it's really big out here in Germany. It's actually flag football is getting huge.
Gotcha. Well, there's a lot of football coaches that go over to different countries, you know, with those leagues to coach. And some of the leagues are pretty small. And there's still a lot of coaches that go over there from the United States and who still want to, you know, continue to coach. I know a few of those guys, but it's flag football is probably a lot of fun for those guys. It's good stuff.
Yeah, man. I'm old.
So what was the brand? What was the initial brand that you started with?
It was called Veteran Empire.
Okay.
Yeah. Veteran Empire. Then I sold it because I came overseas and then I had to sell it.
So did I see I thought I saw that you just did an album. Is that right?
Yeah, man. Filling up that dash. So the album's out on Spotify. It's called 3D. You know, I used to rap. Remember, I was trying to rap.
Yeah, I was trying to get you. I was trying to maybe get you to throw down something just a little bit for me tonight.
A freestyle.
Yeah.
Like what?
Maybe something from one of your latest songs or, you know.
So I said,
maybe one of the early raps you put together.
I said, it's the King David the Fourth, aka the Flea. Game is on lock. I got the key. Let me make it free. David the Third, David the Second. I got history. Been here before. Planted the seeds to your family trees. You want me to keep going? That,
I gotta memorize that.
Yeah, it's on the album, but
what's the name of the album?
It's called 3D.
Okay.
3D, and it's on Spotify, Apple Music, and don't die with nothing left in you. Like, get it all out. Don't die with music in you, and fill up that dash.
Well, I'm gonna tell you this, man. I got a text, Bubba here. And you have remained so humble. I mean, we got to get this information out here. I mean, we got to get you out to the Pirate Nation somehow, man.
Yeah, I would love to come out there.
You know, there's so many people I think that would be proud of what you've accomplished. You know, I mean, as a former pirate.
I'm glad you got this podcast just to keep us together and stuff. And
yeah,
there should be a movie about us. We should call it the 300s because that was a time, man. That was a special time.
Yeah, it really was.
No, they don't run 10 300s anymore.
Oh, no, they don't run much of anything anymore because, you know, the NCAA came down with some guidelines and what? Yeah, I mean, you know, you might be able to get away with some 110s, but, you know, there was some, there was probably a couple dozen deaths during conditioning over the years.
Not in 95 to 99, right? Period.
Well, the thing about, you know, when we ran a 300s, we weren't going to go out there and run a 300s the first day. I mean, we weren't going to run but maybe two. We'd build it up. Of course, we ran hard the other days as well. So, you know, we adapted to the heat over time as well.
Yeah.
So by the time we got down to where we were actually running those things, and, you know, timing you and testing them, everybody was in really good shape, you know. So, you know, you got to be smart about how you train people. It's got to be progressive. Yeah. You know, you can't just go out there the first day and get it done. But yeah, there have been some deaths and, you know, I really think that everything is kind of equal now with strength and conditioning. It's hard to gain an edge on somebody else because everything's been somewhat standardized. And that's sad because I was all about trying to gain an edge, you know, and I was all about that mentality. So, yeah. You know, when I talk to guys that I coach like yourself and you tell me how much it meant to you, that really means a lot to me. You know, it's very satisfying to hear that.
It's the real deal, man. It was real. And I'm still kicking because of that.
I appreciate it. And I think you're also very humble about what you went through as a Marine. And, I know that you went through some tough stuff. You don't even have to tell me. So, I'm so thankful you made it through, man. So thankful. I know God was with you. So, hey, let's get together again. And, this time I won't wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I'll hit but you man, up when I'm in North Carolina. We got to get up.
Yeah, it's so good to talk to you again. And I really appreciate you. You know, I know I've been on Facebook a couple of times and you throw me a like or whatever. And I said, man, I got to get back with Flea, man, see what he's up to. So, but congratulations on all your success.
Thanks,
Cole. And I think the whole Pirate Nation should be proud of you. And I know I'm going to try to put it out there. And, don't be shy about letting people know.
Yeah, I just want you guys to see me on your TV screen more often. So I don't have to say anything, you know, and just know when I'm on that TV screen, it's because of those 300s and them, their conditioning, because I'm pushing hard and working. I'm gonna make it work.
So well, you, one of these days when you're on there, you got to throw me some kind of sign or something. That way it'll be a secret.
What are these little comments coming up? Freddie said Flea had the biggest heart ever. Freddie's.
That might be Freddie Claybrooks.
Oh, snap. Freddie Claybrooks. That could
be Freddie Claybrooks.
Yeah. Dang. Did you have him on the show?
Not yet, but I had Toma.
Oh, Toma. Dang, I missed that one.
Yeah, Toma's in a mental health. He has a mental health practice.
Yeah, and he's somewhere in South America, doing something.
Well, you know, Toma had that heart for God, man. You know, he had that heart.
Yeah, Toma. Yeah, I used to cut my hair.
Toma always had that enthusiasm, man.
Yeah, man. I wish the best for your family and stuff. Keep doing this. This has been fulfilling. I mean, I stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning anytime to do this. No, not really. Don't do it again.
I appreciate it, brother. I'm gonna go ahead and let you go to sleep, and we're gonna get together again. And you got my email. You got my number and everything. Stay in touch, man. I'd love to know what you're doing. Let me know what you're doing.
Thank you, Coach C.
Okay,
Pirate Nation.
Yes, sir. This is Jeff Connors, Absolute Empowerment. Signing off. God bless, and we'll see y'all next week. Thanks a lot.
God bless.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!